You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. It is the day before Turkey Day. We are going to have a very, 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 very busy show, which is great. We love ending on the big high note. Bruce Ash is going to join me soon. Then we're going to talk to our friends about the Critters for Christmas campaign. You probably heard some of the commercials for that. And then Dan Shearer from the Green Valley News, U.S. Congressman Andy Biggs, U.S. Congressman David Schweikert, Steve Farley from the Humane Society, and then we're going to finish with the big turkey drop before it's all over. So
we warmed up Freedom One earlier, so we're ready.
And you know, one of the best ways to have fascinating radio is to talk about the weather.
Okay.
Joe and I used to always have a little bit of a you know, because our friend Mike Shaw used to have that 4 o'clock show, and he's a weather guy, right? And, you know, you tune in and you're like, hey, maybe who's he interviewing locally or whatever? And, of course, he would spend the first 11 minutes going, you know, I looked at the millibars at blah, blah, blah. And you're like, come on, buddy. Get some content, buddy. You know, but I know you talk about what you know and you enjoy. But wet ground, very fascinating. Wet ground out there. Looks like we had some decent little bit of rain, so Just cleaning the place off before Thanksgiving. That's what I like. We're just getting out. We're keeping that dust down a little bit and cleaning the whole joint out, as we like to say. So
I'll take that. That's a nice way of looking.
Look at
it.
Me, Captain Positive here.
Brining the turkey. So
brining the turkey, as we like to say. So, you know, I've never brined a turkey. I don't know why I should. It makes sense. Everyone I respect, you know, has done this. But I feel like the brining days are, I think the trend on the brining of a turkey is over. You don't hear it as much, right? I know it's out there. Even my test kitchen guys are like, well, we'll just use some kosher. What they do, I'm going to kosher salt a turkey, right? Of course. You know, and now the big word is, hold on, dry brine, where literally you're, you know, salting it up correctly and doing it up. But of course, Kent at the sausage shop has made me beautifully lazy, where I brought him my turkey a couple of weeks ago, and he's smoked it. And today, of course, is beautiful pickup day for my turkey and my 2 pounds of country sage sausage, which is going to go into the magical toasted pecan sherry stuffing, as we like to say, later today.
Not going to be fiddling around peeling chestnuts this year.
You know, again, what Matt's referring to is the original recipe was by a lady who was a food writer for New York Newsday that my mom used to read a lot. And she was good. Barbara Raider, her name was. And the Raiders. Go vertical. And it was a chestnut sausage stuffing. And you would roast chestnuts, which, that's one of the best of clips I should have done, is the day that Ed Alexander attempted to roast chestnuts and his disappointment. And just the pain in the buttness of it all, in classic Ed Alexander style, was just magical. But anyway, and then you're supposed to take the chestnuts, and you're supposed to roast them, and then you basically simmer them in your chicken stock that you're going to use to moisten up your stuffing. And you're like, We learned that unnecessary, toast some pecans in a pan to get a better crunch. And you know, and flavor. And that's the way it goes. It was a good feeling last night. I saw Mrs. D throwing in a bunch of fresh cranberries into the big stock pot for some, you know, and she had the her orange peel, now this is, again, I could just talk about food, screw up politics today. It's a game changer in your life in cooking. This is going to sound, this is Christy Simone with First World Problems. Alton Brown, of course, is one of my cooking influences, right? And he'll always tell you, go find a fresh nutmeg, right? Go find the little nutmeg nut thing. You can get them at Sprouts in the bulk spices. That will never, it's so easy, right? And you just hit it on your little hand grater, because Never buy pre-ground nutmeg. It's just like putting some sort of dirt on your in your stuff. So Mrs. D was grinding nutmeg, and tell me what you're cooking too. If you tell me what you're working on, if you want to give us a call, 790-2040 for your Thanksgiving. I don't want to have all the fun here of talking about this. So anyway, I remember I was getting some little work done last night, and all of a sudden I smelled cranberries, orange, and oh, and then of course, you know, got to put a little brandy in there. And so that was good living. That was good living. And, you know, Thanksgiving these days are just, you know, this has nothing to do with what's going on in the world, just the way of the world. In the old days, of course, we would do, you know, we would alternate with my aunt's family, my Aunt Rita's family, between our house and their house, you know, flipping Christmas and Thanksgiving. And it was always like 20, 25 Goombas sitting around the dinner table, right, with that overarching, crazy cocktail hour, right? You know, and it would be something where there'd be more, the amount of food that was served at cocktail hour, right? You'd think it'd just be the cheese bowl, right? You know, and a couple of crackers and pretzels and stuff, right? No. Now, remember, this is the 70s, 80s of my childhood, right? So, of course, what was everyone making in those days? Swedish meatballs, right? So there'd be this giant crock of Swedish meatballs. And then, of course, there's the local Italian bakery that we would go to. Oh, and what did they make? Oh, I don't know. Sausage and roasted bell pepper bread, right? So imagine this killer Italian bread with sliced roasted sausage, roasted red and green bell peppers, onion, mozzarella cheese, right? And then they'd roll that up and then bake that SOB. And then you'd slice that and you're like, oh, why don't I have that, right? And you're like, holy moly, right? Well, but as we like to say in the infomercial, but wait, there's more, right? So then the other thing is we still make it to this day. So when I tell people about this recipe, they always just like, they just go, ooh, that sounds low trash. You know what I mean? It's my mom used to make it in a, does anyone still have a fondue pot? You got a fondue pot, Matthew?
Yes, we do.
Are you fondueing?
Not for a while. No, we haven't for a while, but we got a bottle of Kirsch for the fondue recipe. So yeah, we're all set.
You know what I've learned how to do how to do fondue right? Because the thing about fondue pots.
Not a fondue, not a fondant.
Correct.
Thank you.
The thing about fondues, we're going all over the place this first segment.
Yes, we are. That's okay.
Tough. Go listen to someone else talk about them, how smart they are or something. You know those little hot plates you can get, you know, you get it for a college dorm room, right? It's just a little one that you put a pot on and you plug it in. This is how you do fondue right. Yes, fondue pots are sexy. I got it. But in the end, all you want is a double boiler to do it correct, especially if you're using cheese, right? And so literally it's, you get a one of those college hot plates, got to be, what, $9 at Walmart, put your pot on with water, and then take a heat-proof glass bowl and put that on top. That's all you need. And it's way better than doing the fondue with the sterno, as we like to say. But all right, so then I digress. So what happens is, I'll just finish off the food thing, right? So we already had 14 pounds of food during cocktail hour, you know, and maybe one or three Tom Collins, Manhattans, all those good stuff.
For good measure.
As, it's like the Will Ferrell as Robert Goulet on the Christmas, when he sings My Favorite Thing. It's a Diablo Martini, Johnny. Gives you a devil of a good time. And then you have this amazing turkey, you know, dinner with everything. And piles of fried artichoke hearts. That's the Goomba side of the world, right? Then you got to have, you know, the... Then you got to have your in between dinner and dessert course, right? Which, of course, so what does that mean? So the Goombas, you sit around, you have fennel, right? You would chop fresh fennel up like celery and eat that up. So then you'd have roasted chestnuts, you'd have figs, dates, all that stuff. And we didn't even get to pie at this point yet. Then all of a sudden you'd have pie. Then all of a sudden, you know, then you got the espresso and the anisette at that point is out there. And then then we started playing cards, right? Then once you start playing cards, you know what someone does is they order, they'd call a place called Villa Margarita Pizza and then order a pizza. So no wonder everyone, had diabetes. But we had a hell of a good time in those days. So that's New York Christmas and Thanksgiving. So let's go to break. We got an interview coming up with our friends from Critters for Christmas. And our good friend Bruce Ash just maneuvered into the studio, and we're going to have a busy Wednesday before Turkey Day. So including at the end, the WKRP turkey drop is going to happen before the end of the show. Wake up, Tucson. Ah, there we go. A little Vince Guaraldi, Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. And so what we're going to do right now, we have a special presentation. It's an interview with the folks from, you're hearing these Christmas Critters campaign or Critters for Christmas, where basically it's helping, it's called Gospel for Asia. And what they're doing is they're looking for donations for making, you know, real differences in people's lives. And, you know, you buy them a goat or a cow or something that they can actually kind of, you know, this is kind of the teach the man the fish thing instead of give him a fish. And it's an interesting concept that is brought to us by our good friends at Good News Communications. So, Matt, let's make
it
happen.
Hey, it's Chris from Wake Up Tucson. We're partnering with GFA World in their Christmas Critter campaign. Here's their Director of Medical Services, Dr. Daniel Jones, to explain the campaign.
Christmas is one of my favorite times of the year. You know, this is the time when you actually give. This Christmas season, imagine in your mind that you are giving a cow, which not just gives milk, but gives hope, not just for one person, but for an entire family. What if you actually give a sewing machine, something which not just mends clothes, but lives and families as well, which patches up broken families? Or what if you are able to buy and provide a pig to a person, and the pig helps that family to actually build a house? This campaign, which is called the Critter Campaign, it's a campaign with a difference. You can go online and you can buy a pair of chickens for as low as $11 instead of chocolates. And you give it or donate it to that one family in Asia or Africa, and their lives are completely changed for the future. You can go online and instead of buying socks for yourself, you buy a sewing machine and you change the life of that family. So this Critter campaign, we have, chickens. You can buy chickens, you can buy lambs, you can buy goats, you can buy pigs or cows or water buffaloes or even blankets, simple blankets, the change it makes in a person's life, a sewing machine, or any of those things. This is what the Critter campaign is all about. It's a campaign with a difference where we give to people during the time of Christmas something which will entirely, definitely, and change their lives for the future.
Now Dr. Daniel explains how a GFA World Critter helped a family avoid migrating to follow farm work.
6 months of the year, that is November to April, as an entire family and larger group of people from the same locality, they all travel to the neighboring state and work in the sugarcane fields which are there. That's the only thing they can do during that time. Back home, because there is no rain, no produce, they're not going to survive this. One day when they came back to their own village, one of our missionaries, you know, was reaching out to these group of people in that village, saw this particular young man, heard his struggle, prayed for him, and introduced the love of Jesus into his life. After that happened, they started coming to the church kind of regular kind of thing. The reason is not because they didn't want to come to church, but he had to work every day or try and find some work because he is the only breadwinner in his family. It's during that time that one of these Krita campaign cows was given to him. Now, how does the cow actually change their life? That's the main storyline here. The cow, of course, gives milk. This cow gave 4 liters of milk for him, which is more than sufficient for his family, which meant that he actually started selling the milk. Income started coming in. So what he did, when November came around, he said, I have enough money now, and the cow is here who's going to give me milk. I don't need to move to the next state for these next 6 months. His children were in school, and they actually continued their studies. Now, they have a baby calf. They actually are having hope for the future. What if you can buy a cow which not just gives milk, but gives hope?
You can send a critter this Christmas. Click on the Critter Campaign banner on KVOI.com. Here's another encouraging story where a sewing machine does more than mend clothes. It can mend lives.
Now, this is a story about a young mother who actually had 2 children. Unfortunately, her husband abandoned her. Now, she lives in a city, suburb of a large city in India. Has 2 children. And also her parents to take care of. And the children are growing up. And the only way she could do that is basically to go to different people's houses and wash their clothes, clean their utensils, and somehow try to live each day. It is in that context that one of our Sisters of Compassion teams started to befriend her and talk to her and pray for her. And slowly she started to come to know the Lord, and she found spiritual strength to go on day to day to day in her life. And then a prayer meeting started in her house. And on one of these years, as part of the Krita campaign, she got a sewing machine. Now, here is where entire life now completely changes. She started sewing for not just her own family, but the entire community there. In fact, she said, my husband left me when I was pregnant, and I gave birth to a child, but I had no other way to live. But now I am blessed because I got the sewing machine from these dear sisters and from the church. Now, what she does is every day she earns about 400 rupees in a day. That's enough for her to pay for her children's education, meet her needs and her parents' needs also.
That is Dr. Daniel Jones from GFA World explaining the Critter Campaign. At KVOI, we are partnering to help and give hope for families in Asia. This is Chris with Wake Up Tucson encouraging you to be part of this campaign today. You can send chickens, pigs, a cow, even a water buffalo to a needy family in Asia. You can also give a sewing machine and much more. Make sure to click on the Critter Campaign link on KVOI.com. I hope you'll join KVOI and be part of the Critter Campaign.
All right, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Good morning. I've just been talking for the last several minutes with Bruce Ash, Inside Track. Bruce, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Great to be here. Thanksgiving Eve. Man, this is one of my 2 favorite holidays of the year, Thanksgiving and Passover.
Nice.
This is like all Jew week at Wake Up Tucson, isn't it? Between Brenner and me this week.
Absolutely. I love that. I love hanging out with you guys. You guys are fun. So 790-2040 is the phone number. We've got to go right down to that little green valley, and we have friend of the show, Dan Shearer, who we found out was a vegan on Monday. So
yikes.
No, I'm just kidding.
More fake news. More
thank you very much.
Usually we do that. That's
not you guys. No, there's another place in Southern Arizona, but not you guys.
No comment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Right there.
Dan, tell me about, just real quick, I just want to keep it light, but the one question I do have is, it's been several people have sent me this story about this hedge fund that's going after Lee Enterprise. Tell me about those guys.
I'll give you one fact, and it will sum up those guys quite a bit. It's called Alden, and they bought the Denver Post, and very quickly the Denver Post, and I'm not talking just the newsroom, but the entire operation went from 300 employees to 45.
Holy crap!
Yeah, that's not a typo, as we say. And so this is what they do, is they know that newspapers make money. The problem in newspapering is that we don't make the money we used to, and we have to move over to that digital model. But they come in, and they basically just wring out newspapers for all they're worth and slash the staffs. And they start immediately. They don't make any bones about it. And then they try to cut their way to prosperity, but they do not really have an interest in local news or newspapers or the press in general. They are all about money. And so this has been the history of them. I think Gannett is an awful newspaper chain, but they look stellar compared to Alden. So they come in and they just ravage newspapers, and that's what will happen if they get a hold of the Star, and they're making a push for it. And if they do it, it would probably be a done deal by the end of the year, and it would be a very, very sad thing.
What does the business model look like under these guys? They just run a lot of AP crap, and
they do that, and they will get rid of things like in Denver. They got rid of the first thing to go is the copy editors. And the next thing,
well, they don't have any copy editors worth their salt at the Star anyway.
Yeah, they're down to three over there, I understand. One of them's a guy I went to college with, and he's actually really, really good. But you can see things slipping through because you used to have a whole desk of them. The next thing they did is they got rid of the publisher, and so now they're managing off-site. And then if they boost anything, of course, it's going to be ad sales. But even that, they really don't care about it, because they know that there are some advertisers who are just always going to go to the paper because maybe they want to reach an older audience or for whatever reason. But they just slash. So what they did up in Colorado is a lot of the laid-off journalists from the Denver Post. And remember, the Rocky Mountain News had gone under a long time ago. But from the Post started something called Colorado Sun. And you know, here in Arizona, we have Arizona Mirror, and it is run by Jim Small, who excellent journalist. But these nonprofits will crop up and try to fill the void. In Colorado, it's actually been quite successful. The Colorado Sun has, and they allow newspapers from around the state to use that copy as needed. And so you have some terrific journalists doing it, but the nonprofits more often than not fail. Because they can't get that grant funding, or they can only get enough for just a journalist or two. So it's really a real rough road to go down. So that's what happened in Colorado. It's a real sad thing. Even I'll give you one more strategy. It's something that's already happened at the Star, and that is that they'll take your building away and put you in, you know, a warehouse or something. But the Star already has sold off their plant. They didn't need it anymore after they started printing up in Phoenix, and they're operating out of a couple of buildings in the Tucson area. So that's one thing that would have happened. And again, Alden has not purchased them. They're just making a push for them, and it's an attractive offer. So we'll see if the Lee Enterprises is going to bite.
Is this something bizarre where literally your business model is you almost have an end date of when this thing crashes out? Like basically saying, look, we're gonna all our numbers are based on that we're crapped out in 20 years.
It's going to happen anyway, so let's just push it along a little more quickly, I guess, is the business model. And again, I've never been a businessman, and I admire anybody who has been in business, because it's not easy, but everybody knows you cannot cut your way to success. And that's and again, I don't know that success for them is the same as it would be for me. And I will tell you this, I work for WIT Communications, and this is family owned, so no one's going to come in. We don't have stock, and no one's going to come in and try to buy us for the money that we make. That's not going to happen. But I'll tell you, this family is very committed, number one, to local journalism. And we are in, again, these small pockets across the West, and they are very committed to it. And so they started out as journalists, and we're coming up on our 100th anniversary here in a couple of years. And I'm not saying it's not rough, but I'm saying that we're focused. We just landed a second Google News Initiative grant to help figure out the future for us, and we are heading that direction because it can be done. But the problem is, once we figure it out, how many of us are there going to be left?
Go, Bruce.
At the end of the day, their end goal may be, you know, there's not going to be anything called a newspaper in 20 years or 15 or whatever it is, but you still need people to write. You still need people to decide what is going to go into the paper, even if it's, you know, to get something off the AP or some other source, don't you?
You do, and you what you really need are people on the ground in the community who know the people who are reading the paper and who want just that basic news. We have another startup in Arizona. It's just beginning, and I won't say the name of it because I don't want to. They're still trying to figure things out, but my guess is that it's going to be more of what I would call advocacy journalism, where they're going to go after topics that they think we should believe are important, if that sounds right, like you know, climate change and social justice and all these things, which are important topics, but they're not the end all. And an honest reader will tell you that those are probably way down on the priority list. What do they want to know about? Well, the things they wanted to know about 100 years ago. They want to know, they want to read about schools. They want to read about local government. They want to, they care about their jobs. They care about the things in the backyard that really affect them. And that's what you really need to deliver. But these other things are these kind of these lofty, well, you know, we should all really be concerned about climate change. Well, at a local newspaper, that comes into play at times. We do write about it, but it does not consume our lives in the least, and our readers don't want it to. So a lot of the journalists are going after these. They still are somewhat idealistic. And again, I'm not saying that those are not important topics. I'm saying that that is not front of mind for most of your readers.
You know, isn't a key question here, and especially with the local news game, is does the younger reader give a crap about local news, and will there come a time when they hit a certain age that they might?
I have been through so many reader initiative projects, and I just roll my eyes at them anymore, Chris, because a lot of them are aimed at, you know, that younger reader. Well, that younger reader isn't going to care about roads and schools and taxes until they have started putting roots down in a community. And you know, a lot of 17, 18-year-olds through college, everyone expects that they're going to probably leave their hometown and go see the world. And so they're not that concerned with it. But we see that when they start having children, the kids are going to school, they're paying taxes and realize what that tax bill is all about. They buy a house, you know, that type of stuff. Then they're going to start paying attention. So the younger reader, I'm not so sure, is something that we should be going after, other than in high school and junior high in civics class, when we should be telling people how our local government works. That's what's really missing, is it's a mystery to them still, even when they graduate from high school and college, that this $1 that they earned is not all going into their pocket, and here's why. So I think civics, when you teach that, then you are getting this natural understanding and interest in how your local community works, and then the newspaper is going to be that much more important to you. But for now, I think we still see a delay in that interest.
You could change the world by teaching young people, go through their, here's a paycheck, this is what withholding is, and this is where your money's going, and you can decide whether or not it might be worth it one day.
Well, and everyone's sitting on the sidelines right now letting other people make that decision, and, you know, they don't know, say, for schools, what's a bond, what's an override, what's the difference between the two, the air conditioner breaks at the local elementary school. Well, who's paying for that? Well, you know, the government is.
Hold on, bro. Beyonce just got a new miniskirt, man. I got to go.
That's just so frustrating. they can name the entire Kardashian family, but they can't tell you who's on their city council.
Well, you know, it seems to me reading the news, or what they call the news, there's little context. You can say there's a bond override election, but there's hardly ever any context. So what does that mean to you? How much more is that going to cost you? You know, what does that mean for schools or whatever the case might be? And it's that lack of context that exists today. I mean, I hear it even on the national news here on this station.
Yep, sure.
Okay? And it drives me crazy listening to the news because I understand the context, but when you just throw something out and there's nothing, you can't tie it to something and know what the impact is, that's where the problem is, and people just aren't getting good
news. Or you're getting your news from the Today Show.
Oh my
absolutely
goodness.
Absolutely right. Yeah, and you know, and every once in a while we'll run a little box saying, this is what an override is. Just because, you know, and I will tell you, people are grateful for that because they'll just kind of swim along with it, pretending they know, and they don't know. And sometimes you have to go back to 101, and that's okay. We're willing to do that to educate people, and then they can become more informed voters and decision makers, and hopefully actually go to some of those council meetings and figure out what's up.
All right, let's Dan, if you could hold on for a few commercials, that would be great.
Sure.
When we come back, we're going to get really down into the Green Valley world when we come back. So talking about all this big stuff. I want to know what's going down over there other than peanut butter parfaits at the Dairy Queen. So 790-2040 is the phone number. Dan Shearer, Bruce Ash, Christy Simone. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Local news and talk.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. We did Sandler Thanksgiving song, but Bruce was telling us it's a little early Hanukkah this year. It's this weekend, so we decided to play the Hanukkah song.
That's great. That song is one of the best Hanukkah songs of all time. It beats my little dreidel, I can tell you that, all day long.
As a kid who grew up in in the New York Nassau County Long Island area,
in the center of Judom.
Oh, I was there. I was there. Lots of friends, and I've been to many. I remember dating a girl at NAU who was Jewish, right? And I knew more about her faith than she did because all I did was all my friends were all Jewish, right? I've been to more bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs. I've done it all.
Brisses.
One.
Luckily, it wasn't yours.
But so I've always appreciated. It's been, so I remember growing up at school doing that, singing that dreidel, dreidel, dreidel song all the time as part of the pantheon of holiday songs. So.
I just came back from Israel and I got for our grandkids here a blue dreidel and a white dreidel in honor of the Dodgers, of course.
Thank you.
My wife also just came back from Israel. Her sister lives over there, and if you've never heard the Schleps, you have got to buy some of their songs. They are terrific.
Oh, that's great.
They approach Judaism in a wonderful way, and it really explains the faith.
Look at that. Look at us. We're doing
good
it up
stuff.
Today. Well, Bruce did declare a Jew week, so we're bringing it strong, as we like to say.
Right.
And Matt, please play other parts of the Hanukkah song before the show's over. So it's just too good. So tell me about the Lions Club ending a 50-year bingo run. This just feels damn wrong.
It's wrong, but it's what's happening down here. The La Canoa Lions Club still active. They're around, but they had hosted a bingo game to raise funds to help kids get glasses and test their eyes. They had done this for 50 years, and because they really don't have new members coming in, I think the average age of the Lions Club here, seriously, is about 85. And
wow.
So we don't have younger people coming in to volunteer and to join these clubs, and they just said this is just one thing that we just cannot handle anymore. So that tradition ended on Friday, and we had a reporter at the last game, and it was just kind of a sad thing, but it's one of those time marches on stories, but it's also an end of an era. So 50-year bingo run, and boy, they handed out a lot of money at those things, and at the last game there were only 22 people, so pretty much it was kind of like Oprah. You get a car, and you get a car, you know, everybody won that night, I think, and but it was a lot of fun. But it's gone now.
It's too bad because the Lions have given,
they're terrific,
just jillions of dollars for eye treatment and research and so on. They do great work.
I've got my very first pair of glasses through the Lions Club, believe it or not.
Look at that.
Years ago, and I have never forgotten it. Always been very grateful.
So, Dan, you guys did a story we talked about a couple of weeks ago about tattooing, right, in Green Valley. Any fun responses to this? Like, you know, the granny who has a pickleball for life tattoo tramp stamp or something like that, or someone who can't believe you did a story about tattooing?
That would be what we did hear from a couple of people up in, down in Green Valley. The people up in Sarita liked it, but it's like, look, I thought you were a serious paper. Hey, you not only did a story on tattoos, you did a two-parter on tattoos. You know? And so the first part was on the business of tattoos, and the second part was people who get them. And we had a guy who actually came into the office later, so I got to meet him. But he's was 67 when he got his first tattoo, and his stepson was on one of those tattoo reality shows and won it a few years ago. And so the tattoo is really nice. And
wait until he's almost getting Medicare to get his first tattoo?
Medicare. Yeah.
I thought that was something that you get when you're 19, drunk and stupid.
Well, and he was 19, drunk and stupid at one point in his life, and he just said, I just never wanted it, never liked it. I think his stepson introduced him to the profession and how much it has changed and how the stigma is really kind of gone now, or it's at least it's leaving. And I think that's what finally did it for him, is he could see that, you know, he told me, I walked into a shop, it's just gleaming white, everything's clean, it's not like it's a back alley tattoo type thing, and he said, I felt comfortable about it. So he got two of them, and he's talking about doing a third. And so this really resonated here. We found lots of stats, but it's anywhere between 50% and 60% of adults have a tattoo.
It'll never be me or my two sons.
It's not me and not my thing. However, I'm not quite sure I believe that statistic, but I do know there are a lot of people running around out there with tattoos that you can't see unless you are married to them or you're their doctor. So that's, you know, it very well may be the
well
case.
Put, Dan.
So, I can't believe you only got two complaint letters, believe
it or not. Oh, no, only two I'm telling you about.
Oh. how many do you think you got in relation to complaint letters on this tattoo story?
That we actually heard from, maybe about 10.
Okay.
And then we heard from probably equal number of people who liked it and kind of dug it, you know. I still think with the Green Valley crowd, there's still a little bit of a stigma, you know, it's for sailors and hippies, you know, type of a thing.
Most of them were hippies, for crying out loud, at one point in time. Wasn't everybody? Not me, but...
Oh, God. Yeah, that's true, but they weren't brave enough to get a tattoo.
Hey, real quick, we're running out of time. Is Tubac finally doing a Black Friday thing this weekend?
They are. It's actually going Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's just a long weekend of Black Friday, and go down there. They're going to have about, 40 to 50 vendors, and should be a lot of fun.
Awesome. All right. Happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, Bruce and I are going to talk double congressional. We're going to do Andy Biggs and then David Schweikert, and then Bruce is going to talk a little bit about, I want to talk about his trip to Israel, too. So wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice.